Hello, welcome to networking. Let me start by saying there will be no video for this course. There will be online notes and audio as you're hearing right now. I sent the class a location of the syllabus. I'll send that out again this afternoon. But if we take a look at the syllabus, you can read through the stuff at the top. That's typical stuff. There's no textbook for this course. Everything will be online and on the web. You can read down, and we'll talk more about this as we go. If you look at the week-by-week topics, you can see the topics. There's a link to online notes and other handouts. I will add audio week-by-week as we go. And you can see the homework and the reading assignments. The homework won't necessarily be graded, but will be just more practice for you to keep up and make sure you understand the topics in the course. As far as the audio goes, I apologize if it's awkward. I'm not used to just talking to a machine and not having students in front of me. So hopefully, though, the audio will get better as we go. This is the second time I uttered these words. I spent about 2 minutes a while ago doing this, and then I realized I didn't have a microphone plugged in. So we'll figure this out as we go, and let's get started with the notes. So to get started, we'll start at the beginning and ask the question, what is a network? And we can talk about, well, we will talk about computer networks in here, but we can also talk about networks of things like humans and what's it take to have a network of humans or computers. So what is a network? A collection of devices that use a common communication scheme to share resources with each other over some sort of physical medium. Now, the fancy word for the communication scheme is called a protocol, and we'll talk more about that later. So having said that, what are the minimum requirements to have a network? Informally, more than one device. If you only have one device, there's or one human, there's nobody to talk to. So more than one device can be computers, printers, storage devices, phones, in today's world, televisions, refrigerators, etc. A physical medium, that's the thing that the communication is going to travel over or through. With humans, the physical medium is just the air. Some sort of controlling software. With humans, that's our brain. And the ability to communicate and understand. Formally, you can look at the picture. And what I think is interesting about this picture is look at the date on it. So you can see there, while networks are relatively new, the theory isn't necessarily so. So, looking at the first necessity then, transmission media, and this is with computational devices. The number one kind of transmission media on the planet is copper, as in copper wires. There's a couple types of this. The most common copper is called twisted pair. The twists, well, why is it called twisted pair? Because it's pairs of wires that are what, you ask? Twisted. Twisting reduces the electromagnetic interference. And one thing you need to understand about the network world is networking people don't like to use a lot of words, especially big words. So everything has an acronym or an initialization. Electromagnetic interference is way too many syllables to say. So in the networking world, we call this EMI. Twisted pair is also commonly called unshielded twisted pair. Again, too many words, too many syllables. This is called UTP. There are standards that define twisted pair copper, and these are based on categories. And depending on where you are, the categories vary. a few years ago, Category 5 was a standard. Category 5E for extended is a standard. Today, in this country, perhaps Category 6 is the standard. And even the word category is too many syllables to say. So this is just shortened to Cat 5, for example, for Category 5 twisted pair. There's also coaxial cable, and this is similar to the coax that you might have with your cable TV, if you remember what that is. This uses shielding to reduce the electromagnetic interference. And those are the two most common types of copper. There's also fiber optic medium. This uses some sort of glass or plastic or something that refracts light. This has no EMI since it uses light instead of electricity. This is faster than copper, and the signal travels over a longer distance. But it's more expensive than copper, although it's gotten substantially cheaper. There's also wireless. I'm sure some of you have Wi-Fi in your house or your car or some such thing. This uses radio frequency or RF or infrared or IR or microwave. RF's the most common type. This has a lower bandwidth than both fiber or copper. Although it's gotten better, it's a bit slower, although that's gotten better too, and it's somewhat less secure. So we touched briefly on physical medium types. Now we want to talk briefly on the communication scheme, and we said formally this is going to be called a protocol. This is what defines the establishment of a common language to communicate. Typically, networking protocols are defined in a layered hierarchy, referred to as a suite or a stack. These can be viewed vertically, which I'll show you in a bit, or they can be viewed horizontally, which you'll also see. Some examples of protocols that you may have heard of, you may not, are TCP/IP. TCP stands for Transmission Control. The P always stands for protocol. And the IP stands for Internet Protocol. Typically, you'll see TCP and IP combined, even though they're two separate protocols. I guess most of you have heard of HTTP. That's Hypertext Transfer. Again, the P is protocol. FTP, File Transfer Protocol. And so forth. There's a zillion of these, and this is just an introduction to some of them. So to have common communication schemes, we need standards. And usually the standards are defined by varying organizations. And I tried to group these in some sort of organizational grouping here. So the first group is industry, trade, and professional organizations. The first one of these is EIA/TIA, and this is for Electronic or Telecommunication Industries Association. These are the folks that define things like copper categories. The second one is IEEE, the Institute for Electrical and Electronics Engineers. And the third one of these is the Internet Engineering Task Force. And these folks are responsible for RFC management. We'll talk about RFCs in a bit. The second grouping of these are national, in this country, national. The group is ANSI. And this stands for American National Standards Institute. The third grouping is international. And the one you'll see frequently is ISO International Standards Organization. If you drive down, say, Blue Ash Road, and in the industrial park of Blue Ash, you'll see signs on businesses, and they'll say something like ISO 2000. That's ISO. Then the other international one is the International Telecom Union. Because the internet is now a global phenomenon, different groups want to get control. For example, China would love to have control because they don't want the internet free in their country. The last one is a little bit different, and it is a standards management technique. And the standards are documented and managed by things called request for comments. And these are not corporate mandates. These are more user mandates. So if I have a good idea, what I can do is publish my idea, send it out to the world, and ask the world to comment on it. The world will then send me their comments back, which may be good, which may be bad, so that everyone gets along. Those comments are incorporated into the document, assuming they're relevant. And when everybody's happy, these documents become what's called an RFC. RFCs are what are going to define certain things like IP, and we'll look at some of these in detail as we go forward. Next, we want to talk about two ways to describe networks. The first way is called a taxonomy, and this is based on geography, and you've heard some of these terms before. The first taxonomy is called a LAN, and this is a local area network. Typically, a LAN is within a single building site, typically controlled by a single organization like a business. These are relatively small things. Depending on your network in your house, you might have a LAN. The other common one of these is a WAN, a wide area network. This is larger than a LAN, typically across multiple buildings and multiple organizations. In the beginning, there were just two kinds of networks, and then marketers got involved, and now we have something called a storage area network. And this has been around for a while, but didn't really catch on because people didn't really want to pay for something called a storage area network. And then a marketer got the idea to call this cloud storage. So that's what a cloud device is just a networked storage device. There's also something called a metropolitan area network, a network throughout a city, say. There's also something called a PAN, a personal area network. This is also called a home LAN. And if you've got a few devices inside your house, that's probably what this is. So a PAN is a small LAN. And then there's also something called a GAN, which is a global area network around the planet. And this is a very large WAN. If you think about a company like Procter & Gamble, they certainly have a global area network. The other way to describe networks is by their topologies. And these are essentially how the physicalness of the network is built. Physical topology defines the cable's actual configuration. These are types like star, buses, mesh, rings, etc. The logical topology defines the path that the signal will follow. The logical topology is not necessarily the same as its physical topology. I've tried to draw some pictures of these, the first of which is point-to-point, where you have one computer directly connected directly via a wire, say, to another. Not many people use this anymore, and we really don't care about this, but I just wanted to mention it. What we do care about are broadcast topologies. The first one of these is a bus. The horizontal line you see there connecting the nodes is the bus. There's also something called a ring topology. And this is somewhat outdated. I don't think a lot of people use rings anymore. And then the third common type of this is a star network. Now, briefly, when we talk about network paradigms, there's two common paradigms that kind of define the networking world. The first of these is the U.S. Postal Service, actual paper mail, everybody remembers this. The second paradigm that we talk about is the old telephone system. Remember landlines? The acronym here is POTS, for plain old telephone service. And these two paradigms essentially are what networking is based upon. And we'll see this throughout this course. With broadcast topologies, all networks share a single channel. Who gets the data on that channel? Everybody. It's as if we were in the classroom and I was talking, who would hear this? And the answer is everybody in the classroom. How does the node, the destination node, know that the data is for them? With things called addresses. And this is where I say the Postal Service. How do you get mail delivered to your residence via an address? How many addresses does a letter coming to you usually have? The answer there is usually two, the destination address, which is in the center of the envelope, and assuming the sender's polite, up in the left-hand corner, there's a sending address. So how does the destination node know it's for them? Each node on the network looks at the destination address of the data. If the destination is theirs, they process the data. Networks are polite. They don't read other people's data unless they're being bad. Otherwise, the data is discarded or dropped. With multiple hosts sharing a channel, this introduces the concept of contention. This is similar to if we were in a classroom and multiple students were talking at the same time. We might not hear what anybody's trying to say because lots of people are talking. And we'll talk about how networks handle this. Differing topologies and or protocols will handle contention in differing manners. So there's three broadcast address types. Unicast goes to a single destination. Multicast goes to multiple destinations, but not everyone. And a broadcast address goes to everybody on the network. Another way we want to talk about networks is switched networks. There are two types of switched networks. There are circuit switch networks, and there are packet switch networks. With a circuit switch network, prior to any data transmission taking place, a dedicated physical circuit between the source and the destination nodes must be established. If anybody's ever seen the Andy Griffith show, and I know maybe I'm showing my age, and you've seen Andy make a phone call, before he makes the phone call, he has to talk to the operator, and the operator has to plug a physical cable in. That's the establishment of the circuit. This circuit remains in place for the entire duration of the connection, even if no data transmission is taking place. The public telephone system works this way. This is where I talked about the phone system. As I mentioned, this is called POTS, for plain old telephone service. The other type of switching is called packet switching. With packet switching, data is divided into smaller units or pieces or chunks called packets. The data packets are transmitted to the destination node via intermediate switches. There's two types of packet switching. There's virtual circuit packet switching, where the data follows the same logical path. And there's datagram packet switching, where each packet is transmitted independently of the others and may or may not follow the same path. If you look at the syllabus, I have an article for you to read. It's a one-page article. It's short on switching. So between now and next week, read that article, please. We also talk about the concept of reliability. One of the key buzzwords in reliability is quality of service, or QoS. We talk about data integrity. Was the data received the same as the data sent? Then there's two sorts of error concepts, error detection and error correction. With error detection, the two techniques are parity checking and CRCs, or cyclic redundancy checks. And with error correction, we have retransmission and redundancy. The question I ask you folks is, which is more expensive or harder, error detection or error correction? And finally, we talked about this earlier, but now it's time to talk about it in detail. We have these protocol reference models. These are the models that define the protocol stacks. These provide a detailed set of standards for describing a network. This is what we said earlier. This formally defines the concept of a layer network. Each layer is independent from each other's. New technologies from one layer can be added without affecting the other layers. You see this in wireless. When wireless came along, you just merely replaced the wired layer and stuck in the wireless layer, and everything else worked seamlessly. There's two standard protocol reference models, the OSI model and the TCP/IP model. The OSI model is a 7-layer model, and if you've ever taken a networking certificate course or picked up a networking certificate book, you'll see the OSI model talked on forever. OSI this and OSI that. I've never understood that, because in practice, no one, and I mean no one, uses the OSI model. So after today, we will never ever talk about the OSI model again. What everybody does use is the TCP/IP model. And on week one's syllabus, I've got some pictures of actually both of these different models. And let me talk a little bit, and then I'll go look at the pictures. Now, we have these layer terminologies, and the 5 layers in the TCP/IP model from top to bottom are application, transport, network, data link, and physical. So the data at the application layer is called a message. The data at the transport layer is also called a message. The data at the network layer is called a packet or a datagram. The data at the data link layer is a frame. And at the physical layer, the data is pure bits, or if you really want to talk about the data at the physical layer, it could be electric pulses or light pulses, whichever. Layers provide different sorts of service types. There's two of these. The first is connection-oriented service. The second one is connectionless service. Connection-oriented service is similar to circuit switching, where a connection is established prior to data transfer. The connection remains for the length of the session. The pros to this is it guarantees sequential delivery of data. The cons are your circuit's established even if you're not sending. The other type of service is connectionless service, where no connection is established prior to the data transfer. This can be reliable, or this can be unreliable. Now, unreliable sounds bad, but in reality, sometimes it's a desirable concept. So just because it's unreliable does not necessarily mean it's bad. Well, that gets us through the class notes for this week. If you next click on the protocol diagrams, you'll see that I've got several of these in an online document. I got these out of different books, so they've got different figure names and page numbers, so pay attention to which one I'm talking about. The very first one, labeled figure 12.5, is the OSI model. How do you know this? Because it's got seven layers. And this is just for, just to talk about a picture. We're not going to talk in detail about OSI. There's two stacks here. Notice that the direction of the data when you send is downward, and the direction of the data on receipt is upward. So there's the seven layers of OSI: application, presentation, session, transport, network, data link, and physical. Again, no one has ever implemented this model. The next diagram, again, is OSI, but that's okay. If you look here, this is figure 1.7, and the sender is on the left, and again, the direction is down, and the receiver is on the right, and the direction is up. There's your seven layers, just as before. What's interesting here, or what's important to note here, is see the data at the top, and notice the data gets bigger at every layer on the way down. That's because addressing and other data is added to the original data at each layer. So the packet gets bigger on the way down, and similarly, it gets smaller on the way up. Another way to think about this is it's an envelope or a container being put in another envelope or a container at every layer. The next picture is a TCP/IP protocol stack, and there you can see the different protocols. That's not a great picture. Next is a picture of the two OSI and TCP/IP models together. And then over at figure 12.10 is another picture of TCP/IP and OSI together. Notice that the layers don't necessarily line up exactly. TCP/IP application layer ends right in the middle of the session. And this is implementation specific. So one type of network might not exactly match another type of network. And finally, the last picture, a little crooked one, with figure 12.1, shows the five layers of TCP/IP and the members in that layer. And that's a look at our protocol models. We've got one more thing to talk about today, And if you look at the right part of the syllabus, you'll see the number systems link. And we need to talk about a little bit of math in here, because we're going to have to do some number conversions between differing number systems. This isn't hard, and you can use calculators all you want, but I want to talk a little bit about why and how this works. So, given a number system of base n, where n is an integer, and this is a generic introduction, the number of digits in a system with base n will always be n. The number range in said number system will range between 0 and n minus 1. You'll see what I'm talking about in a second. The units for any number system, starting from right to left, the first unit will be the base to the zeroth power. The next unit will be the base to the first power. Next, the base to the second power, and so on. So you're thinking, what the heck is he talking about? Well, let me show you. With base 10, where our base is 10, this is a decimal base. The number of digits in the decimal system is 10. The range of the digits is 0 to 10 minus 1, which is 9. And the units from right to left are 10 to the 0, which gives us the 1's column, 10 to the 1st, which gives us the 10's column, 10 squared, which gives us the 100's column, and so on. So if we look at any random number, like 376 in base 10, I ask, why is it 376? Because it's 3 times 10 squared plus 7 times 10 to the 1st plus 6 times 10 to the 0th. And if you add those all up, you get 300 plus 70 plus 6, which gives us 376. Next, we want to talk about base 2 numbers. This is called binary. In base 2, the number of digits is 2. The range of digits is 0 to 1, meaning there are only two digits, 0 and 1. The units from right to left is 2 to the 0, 2 to the 1st, 2 squared, 2 cubed, 2 to the 4th, etc. So if you want to count the columns, it's the 1s, 2s, 4s, 8s, 16s, and so on. So if we take a binary number like 1011, what is that in decimal? It's 1 times 2 cubed plus 0 times 2 squared plus 1 times 2 to the 1st plus 1 times 2 to the 0th. And that's 1 times 8 plus 0 times 4 plus 1 times 2 plus 1 times 1. You add all that up, you get 8 plus 3, and that gives you 11 in base 10. Switching then to base 16, the number of digits in this number system is 16. This is called hexadecimal, sometimes referred to just as hex. So the number of digits is 16. The range is 0 through 9. Now, we can't have 10 as a digit because 10 is two digits. So after 9, we switch to letters, and the letters are A through F. So A is 10, B is 11, C is 12, etc. The units are the base to the powers, 16 to the 0th, 16 to the 1st, and 16 squared, etc. So the number 62 in base 16 is 6 times 16 to the first plus 2 times 16 to the zeroth. And remember, anything, any number to the zero power is 1. So it's 6 times 16 plus 2, which is 98. If we look at another example, 3b to the 16th in hex, it's 3 times 16 to the first plus 11 times 16 to the zeroth. Remember, b is 11, so that gets us 48 plus 11, which is 59. We're going to need to use this as we go throughout the course, because when we look at network data, it's going to be in different formats, like hex, and we're going to need to look at it at the bit level, so we're going to need to switch back and forth between some of these number systems. Again, feel free to use a calculator. Microsoft's calculator lets you switch back and forth. You just have to switch in programmer mode, I believe. And then one last thing is our maximum hex digit is an F. And when we look at that in binary, that will be 4 ones, which is 8 plus 4 plus 2 plus 1, which is 15 in decimal. And that's what we said, 15 in decimal is the same as F in hex. Now, I'm going to give you a short, simple practice exercise to convert some numbers back and forth. Feel free to use a calculator. This is just for you to get comfortable in differing number systems. And I think that's it. Thank you.